Welcome, listeners. I'm glad you are here.
Welcome to the Live Vegan Podcast. This is episode 38. I'm your host, Kevin Leahy, and this is a podcast featuring inspirational leaders in the animal rights community and helping vegan activists become as effective as possible. We are joined once again by the creative and courageous co-host of Cambridge, Ben Lowa. What's up, Ben?
Hey, you're not supposed to tell people where I live. I don't want people showing up at my door.
Well, it's a big city. I don't know if they'll find you.
It's not really that big. It's okay. It's all good.
Well, it would have been cool if your name started with a hard C like Calvin Coolidge, because then I could have really run with the...
the alliteration?
Yeah. All right. So I'm excited about our show tonight. We have an incredibly important topic to discuss. But first, I just want to say thank you so much to those who have signed up to our Patreon account. If you'd like to check it out, you can find it at patreon.com/theLiveVeganPodcast, and you can help support the show for as little as $1 a month. All the money goes towards spreading the message of each individual guest because we think each message is incredibly important and we want to spread that message as far as possible. So thank you. All right, let's start the show. When animal rights activists talk about a vegan world, we are talking about fighting for the next generation, not just for animals, but humans too. We want a world where our children can live their entire lives in accordance with their values. Currently, animals are slaughtered for food at the rate of 3,000 lives per second, and all of that killing is completely unnecessary. So for the parents who have tried to explain why that violence occurs, you know about the innocent and benevolent spirit that exists within children. And that is the purest state of humanity, benevolence and love. And we crush that when parents tell children that this violence is okay. Children must be conditioned to normalize this kind of violence and eventually say things like the circle of life or food chain. But the vegan parents who have chosen to opt their children out of this normalized violence have their own struggle, and they force their children into a struggle of their own. Everyone knows being a kid is hard enough, but being a kid and different can seem almost unbearable. Yet these are the choices we are given. So thankfully, today, we have two vegan parenting experts who are going to discuss the difficulties that exist with vegan parenting. Their names are Emily Wood and Lauren Panoff. Emily is the Chief Executive Officer of Raise Vegan Incorporated and the Creative Director for Raise Vegan Magazine. She is a vegan parent from New York City dedicated to spreading veganism in all stages of life. Lauren has a Master's of Public Health. She is a registered dietitian and a lifestyle strategist for vegan families. She is a writer and the founder of Chronic Planet. She is also a mom of two thriving plant-powered boys. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Kevin and I are also both parents, and here's a question that we get all the time, but I want to ask you guys how you would respond. Why would you not only brainwash your own children, but suggest that others do the same? Shouldn't these kids be able to make their own decisions in what they live and what they eat and how they live?
I mean, I think that's up to the interpretation of the parent, because for me, my son doesn't know anything except for veganism. And the same way for most children who are brought up in a meat-eating household, they don't know any other way. So it's not necessarily on either part what I call it brainwashing your child, but it's rather it's your family tradition and your values that you're sharing with your child.
How should we deal with these doctors? Because I hear stories all the time from my doctor said that my kid needs this or this. And it's stuff that, you know, if we've done the research, you've looked into it, you know that it's not factual, but their understanding is so outdated. And a lot of these doctors have very minimal nutrition education. But how do we deal with them? Do we just go find a new doctor? Do we try and educate a doctor? Like what advice would you guys have?
I think it's really up to the parents to decide what they're most comfortable with. You of course want to find a doctor that you're comfortable with and you're happy with going to and bringing your kids to. So if if the parent is more comfortable finding a new doctor, by all means, they should do that. But if they're in a situation where they think that they could have that open, honest conversation with their current physician about nutrition, then they should definitely try that too. But I always tell people, doctors are medical experts. Go to them for medical advice. That's what they know and are trained to do. And hopefully, if there was a real nutrition concern, they would be, referring you to a nutrition expert, like a dietitian.
Okay, so what do we say to other parents who, and I've had this happen to me before, where they say it's not fair? They say, you've got the choice, you've got the ability to make your own choice, but you're taking the choice away from that child. And I always wonder at what age it would be appropriate to explain to the child what's happening and then give them the choice. Obviously, I don't want to show my 4-year-old earthlings or, any kind of graphic violence, but that's sort of the picture of why we're doing this. So what do you recommend? What would be the appropriate age to let them make their own choice?
I don't think there's any age that you can nail down and say this is the right age for any child. I think it's going to be depending on your relationship with your child, the child's maturity, the child's understanding of kind of like the world around them. Because at one point, they're going to start asking questions and then you're going to have to navigate that. And I'm sure, like you said, you have a 4-year-old, it's probably already starting. It's very easy for me at 2 and a half, like with my son, who's 2 and a half, there's not really any questions. He loves chickens. He loves, the animals and we visit them, but there's nothing further yet. And from what I've seen in our parenting groups, like it really depends on the child and your own family dynamics, because there are a lot of, I'd say vegan activist families out there, and their family culture is going to be different than, say, somebody who's, just a person who keeps quiet in their house and they eat vegan and they're not really forward at, like going out and protesting every weekend, things like that. So you'll see a lot of different children, even like on Instagram and things like that, and they will participate in different ways with their family. And it's going to be based on your own values and your own way that you exist in the world that you'll be able to slowly bring your child into understanding why you're vegan and then, about the vegan community and about the situation that animals are in.
Lauren, are there any nutrients that children can't get from plants?
It's kind of the same whether you're a child or not. When you go on a vegan diet, so absolutely no animal products, you should be paying attention to still things like B12 for kids. And of course, just kids in general, they need a lot of different nutrients, but for the most part, they can get everything they need from a plant-based diet.
So should we be supplementing B12? Should we be giving them drops or vitamins, or just finding things that are enriched with B12?
I've never actually seen B12 for kids. I don't know if they make that. I usually give my daughter a B12 supplement that's designed for adults.
Yeah, so there is a lack of B12 supplements on the market that are designed specifically for kids or specifically even for vegans. But like Emily said, some parents are getting B12 sprays or drops that are designed maybe for older populations and giving those to their kids in smaller doses, which you can do. B12 is not one of the, more dangerous nutrients. It's not, there's no evidence that there's going to be a toxicity issue with B12. It's a water soluble vitamin. But it's a good idea to look at the child's overall diet, of course, and see what B12 sources might be there. So things like fortified plant milks or nutritional yeast, if you use that, and some kind of meat analogs will have B12 as well. So it's kind of a combination of all of those things.
Yeah, I don't usually supplement my kids. I make sure the almond milk I buy is fortified with B12, and they have a couple of glasses of that, like one for dinner and one with their breakfast, and they pretty much get what they need.
Yeah, and it's a good idea too, I think, for anyone that goes vegan, but especially kids, when they've been vegan for a while, which probably, you know, at least talking to us, they've been vegan since they were born, but to get a baseline, you know, go when they go for their well child visit, you can request to have a B12 level evaluated just to get a, you know, a baseline of where they're at and if any adjustments need to be made in their diet or their supplement routine, things like that.
Okay, what about soy and babies? There's a lot of stuff out there saying, oh, you can't give soy to babies. It's not good for them. It's harmful.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no, soy formula is absolutely fine if your infant is not breastfeeding. You know, there's soy formula is so available these days. And then when they start eating solids, soy is absolutely fine when they're over a year. Things like tofu are such easy finger foods when they get to that stage, or soy milk, of course.
It's hard for me. My family, my husband and my son are allergic to soy. And so it does mean that we get left out of all those awesome meals that I'll see. Like Lauren posts in our dietitian group, all these cute little tofu things. And I just wish I could try them. I need like a good, I've heard of hemp tofu, but I need a good replacement to give it a shot. Like, you know, I always see such great recipes with tofu.
That's still a great testament though, that your family doesn't even consume soy and you're still all vegan.
Yep. And my husband's a bodybuilder. My son is gigantic too. And there's really like, we also can't have gluten. So it's just an allergy house and we make it happen.
See, Kevin, there's no excuse.
No soy, no gluten, and you're vegan and you're still alive.
That's right. Still kicking.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a testament. You must really love the Beyond Meat Burger, though.
Oh my God, we go crazy for it. It's sold out all over. I mean, like, in at least our area, we can't get it. And it's depressing because that's like our treat meal. We're like, let's get some burgers and just hang out. It's the best.
Yeah,
I'm so glad they came out with it.
The first meat analog that's soy and gluten free that I know about.
Yeah.
At least one that's good.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so I'd like to know about deficiencies and symptoms. Like, what should we be looking for? I know if I feel a certain way, I can just Google it. You know, if I feel like tired or if I feel something just wrong with me, I'm aware. But even with my daughter, who, you know, earlier in childhood, she couldn't communicate, and now sometimes she's just not thinking about it because it could be normal for her to feel a certain way. So what kind of symptoms should we be looking for to target deficiencies, for example, B12 or iron or calcium or whatever our children could be deficient in?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, just looking at your child as a whole, you know, are they developing properly? Are they growing at a linear curve when you go to the doctor? Are they, you know, putting on the weight that they should be? But then when you're trying to look at specific nutrient deficiencies, you know, it would be things like excessive fatigue. They're really tired. They just kind of don't seem themselves. Sometimes it takes a while for a nutrient deficiency to show up physically. So it could be a while before you see any symptoms like cognitive delays or things like that. But again, this is something that I would recommend bringing up with your physician at the well child visit and see when it's appropriate to take that nutrient panel. And parents of vegan kids, I always say, should request those additional things like the B12 and the vitamin D and make sure they're checking their iron status. Just again to get a baseline and see if there's anything that could be developing that may not have symptoms yet.
Now, I find one of the more challenging things about raising vegan children, and Kevin alluded to it in the intro, is that they're being raised against the social norms. And, you know, all their friends are not vegans, and the kids they go to school with. So how do you recommend dealing with situations like go to a birthday party and they're having pepperoni pizza and cake, and how, you know, a child going to that is being seen as different and an outsider, and how can we make that easier for them?
This is something that we talk about in the magazine on our website, and something that is super close to our core values with Raise Vegan, is we want children to flourish on like growing up in this lifestyle. So we've given tips like, you know, making sure that if you're going to a birthday party and you know non-vegan food is going to be served, you coordinate with your fellow parent and you talk with them. Oh, there's going to be pepperoni pizza. I'm bringing a diet of pepperoni pizza. You know what I mean? Like, I'm substituting. So he has his own thing that looks exactly, well, not necessarily exactly the same, but he has his own thing that's the same. It's not like I'm sitting there being like, well, you have to eat the carrot sticks and hummus and your friends can have pizza. It's about working. I would say you have to put yourself out there. It's working with your fellow parents, because at the end of the day, we need to respect each other. And if somebody didn't, I mean, then I guess that's more difficult, and you might want to take that and be like, do I want him going to this birthday party? But it's about learning how to navigate things. My son's in preschool, for example. So for every single birthday, they would have a group snack where they would, you know, bring in cake, and obviously it's not vegan cake. So I just would touch base with the teachers and then bring in his own vegan cupcake to have on that day. So as long as you're communicating with your parents and then also children's caregivers and really working together to make them feel like they are normal, you have a better chance of them feeling good regardless, because they don't really notice like, oh, I'm not having the exact same pizza. And kids aren't really going to notice the same thing either until they're a little bit older. And that's when it does get to be a conversation with your child. I know like the earlier question we had where it's, you know, when do you talk to your kids about what's happening to animals? But once they hit that age where it becomes like, you know, they're aware of what's going on around them in a different way, that's when you can say, well, this is why.
Okay. So what about the flip side? What if we are hosting the party? My daughter's birthday is coming up in like a month or so, and I know I'm not going to be serving any animal products, but like, how do you suggest we have that conversation with the other parents?
I mean, I wouldn't even have the conversation.
Yeah.
It's like you have all the same exact things. No one's going to be like, oh, this is vegan. Like, just don't even say anything. And if somebody did, I'm sure all they'd say was, wow, this is really great cake. Where'd you get it from? You know, I think that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as parents, like in like being vegan, we feel different in a way. So we kind of put ourselves in the place where we're worried about things we really shouldn't be. Like, your kids are going to be there for what, an hour or two at most. They're going to enjoy whatever you serve. I'm sure you're going to have, you know, regular snacks. It's not like vegan food is so out there. I mean, unless you wanted it to be, you know, a tofu party, like you can kind of
sounds
make it
awesome.
Work. It does.
That's my next theme for a party. Okay, I got a question that's it's not necessarily something that everybody deals with, but split households or split families. So you've got one parent who is raising a child vegan. And you've got another parent that is trying to convince them to just, you know, follow the status quo and eat animal flesh and secretions. And there's even instances where they might even be forcing children against their will, because children are naturally compassionate, to eat animal products. How do you suggest as the vegan parent to deal with that?
I don't have obviously personal experience with this, but from the countless parents in our groups and on Instagram, I've seen the situation before, and I can only kind of give an insight of what they've said to me. I know I was speaking with a father a couple weeks ago, and his family separated, and his kids live with the mom and with him on, they have an alternating schedule. And as of right now, the kids are vegetarian. They're not fully vegan. And they are at the age where they know what, meat, is dead animals. They understand that. They're not, they're not in their teenage years. They're not really old enough quite yet to understand fully, that, because they're not getting shown, I guess you could say, the dairy industry videos and stuff like that. So they don't quite understand why the byproducts are, they cause cruelty. And I think that he's kind of navigating it as, he's showing them, this is how I eat. This is, the fun things we can make on my, week where you're here. And then it's up to them to kind of navigate it. And obviously being open and speaking with your child, and if they are being pressured into eating animal products at the other parents, it's trying to work with your kids, listening to them, and then also trying to navigate things with an ex-spouse where that can be a little bit more of a difficult situation. But you can only do what you can is, open up the conversation and say, I really don't want them eating this. This is why. I know, you eat differently. Is there any way we can work together to balance it out?
Is there any legal precedent that you know about? I imagine two parents who split up and one is of a certain religion and the other is of a different religion. I hate to compare it to religion, but I'm just thinking of a legal precedent where, and then they argue over which religion the kid ends up practicing. Is there one parent that ends up making those kinds of decisions? And then the same would be true for a diet?
As far as I don't think that there's any kind of legal precedence, but I don't have enough experience on the subject. If it would be primary custody or not, it could happen. I mean, my own parents are divorced, and I've seen the nasty side of things, but I don't know the legalities and the technicalities for a vegan diet and how to do that with a divorce.
No worries. So what about Halloween? What do we do for Halloween? Because my daughter loves dressing up, and the only thing she loves more than dressing up is candy. What do you suggest we do?
I actually saw there's a really great article up on raisedvegan.com last year about this. And also you always see resources like PETA Kids and other places that post them, but there's so many cute ideas that you can do. Obviously you can go trick or treating with your child. And then what you can do is the trade-in where you go and you donate the candy to veterans. I'm not sure if it's they're able to exchange it for funding or whatever the actual processes, but you can donate the candy that was trick-or-treated and then you just supply your own vegan candy. Another thing, something that we do, because my son is still little and we're not going blocks and blocks and blocks in our apartment building, for example, I'll go and talk to the neighbors. My son has allergies. He's allergic to dairy, soy, and gluten, which is in most candies, especially chocolate, even has soy lectin, and he's super sensitive. So I go and I give them allergy friendly candy beforehand, and then they just give us our own candy back. But it depends on how you want to go about it. But I like the trade-in option where you can kind of swap it out and then donate it. Even, I've heard of parents bringing it to work the next day, the non-vegan candy for their coworkers. It's just deciding what you want to do with the...
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work to do throughout the neighborhood and stage all the vegan candy.
Well, that's why I say it's just in our apartment building I do that. Right. But once he's older and he's going to be outside in the blocks, I'm obviously going to have to do the trade-in.
Okay. Lauren... Babies need fat. That's what we were always told. I remember when my daughters were first born, when they were little, my mom was like, make sure you get them lots of, the whole milk and the fat milks. Is that even accurate? Is that true? Do babies need more fat? And If so, how do vegan babies obtain that fat?
They do. Babies definitely need fat. It's really important for their brain development and their cognition. And of course, you know, putting on weight when they're chunky little babies. When they're infants, they can get all the fat that they need, obviously, from the breast milk. When they're weaned and transitioning to solids, I mean, you can get fats in a lot of plant foods. So the first food for my oldest son and will be for my second son is avocado. You know, that's an easy one. You just can puree it with a little bit of liquid and it can be a first food. Easy to mash later on. You know, that's a really good source of those omega-3 fatty acids that we need. And then eventually you'll be able to introduce like nuts and seeds. In the beginning, you'll be able to puree those up, add some liquid, so they're a little bit easier on their little mouths and stomachs. If you have to, you know, find other ways to add it, you can add some oils here and there for additional fats and calories. And soy milk is a great source. You know, soy foods and some of the plant milks will have more fats in them. So there are a variety of ways to get fats. And yeah, it is really important for the kids to get them.
Okay, these are all really good tips. I'm wondering how, and I know you mentioned there are a lot of resources online, but I'm thinking of a pediatrician that would be maybe vegan himself or herself, if possible, that we could find online. Maybe we could communicate with online, like through Skype. Does that exist? Does that service exist anywhere?
Just call Lauren.
Did I just come up with a million-dollar idea? Because you guys can run with it. I'm okay with giving you the idea. I know that this exists in the veterinary world where people don't have to bring their dog directly to a vet just to get something minor checked out. Like, you could show the vet through Skype, look, he's got a little rash. It's right here behind his ear. Do you think I need to bring him to a vet? And so there's like a service, a monthly service that you pay for that. So I just wonder, is there something like that for kids, for vegan nutrition, vegan pediatricians?
So pediatricians, yeah, I mean, telehealth, virtual consultations with health professionals is the wave of the future. And I think that that's really where things are going. So I would imagine that there are doctors that and pediatricians that hopefully some of them have expertise in plant-based diets for kids would be available. I don't know. I haven't searched it myself.
Okay, Kevin, there's your idea.
All right.
You've come up with a lot of ideas on this show, so you got a long list of things you got to put into practice.
Anyone listening, you can take it and run with it. Go ahead.
Okay, so we talk about kids being vegan in a non-vegan world, but what about kids that become activists? And I don't even just mean the kids that are doing street activism, but I mean even just in their school, the kids that they go to their classmates and tell them about veganism, whether it's, you know, first, second grade, and teaching their friends about what's being done to non-human animals in this world and how unnecessary it is. Is that okay? Is that something that we should encourage them to do? And then, I mean, I imagine that would be even risking upsetting other parents when the kids come home and said, hey, this is what so-and-so told me at school.
So this is something that I've actually spoken with a couple of mothers about, because it is, once they hit first, second grade, then they do start being a little more outspoken about, oh, dairy, like that cheese is bad. You know, I know one mom I spoke to, she's awesome, but she said her daughter like refused to sit next to kids at school eating, like, for example, a bologna sandwich, because to her it smells disgusting, and she became very verbal about it. So the teacher contacted the mom being like, well, this happened in school today. And it's just, I think it's more so you have to talk to them about when it's appropriate, when is a good time to have these kinds of conversations with your friends. Like, it's not something that you want to shout out at lunchtime, but if you were sitting with your friend at school and you were talking to them about diet, you might be, it might be a little more appropriate. Like, you know, in context. And it's difficult when they're at that age to really navigate it because it's a very social age. So it's deciding on, you have to decide on how to tell them when it's appropriate, when it's not, and work with obviously teachers and things like that to make sure that your child feels comfortable eating lunch. Like, you don't want them to be not eating their food. So it's just, it's, sorry guys, I know there's, so there's some editing. My son just walked up to me and is kicking,
okay.
Kicking the microphone.
It's the perfect episode for
exactly.
It.
Okay. Vegan child can yeah. Have a voice.
He's here. But it's just talking to them and telling them, okay, this is how we can do it nicely. This is, you know, maybe share your vegan snack with them and be like, oh, this doesn't have milk in it. Do you want to try? Just little things like that can make it a little easier for them.
Now, what about actually the kids that are doing the public activism? Some of the most effective activists that I've seen in person are children, because people are more receptive to listen to them and to their message. But is that something that if a child is, I'm assuming most of these children are more extroverted, but if they are that personality, is teaching them to, you know, go against, not just go against the social norms, but to encourage others to do the same in a public way, is that appropriate for some children?
I guess you can take, it's taken obviously case by case. I wouldn't like give a generalization for this at all, because like you said, the children activists are incredible. Like, I've, you know, seen videos and things like that, and it really, it does hit you in a different way when it's coming from a child. And obviously as a parent, it makes you feel better about what you're doing. You're saying, you know, this is what confidence I'm instilling in my child as well. But I would take it almost like, if your child is talented at something, if they're amazing at singing, they're amazing at dancing, you're going to do whatever it takes to encourage that child's passion. And, you know, in the, like, you know, in other generations, a boy might not be encouraged to dance, for example, because they're, you know, the dad wants them to be playing baseball. And I feel like in today's day and age, we're really changing that norm, and we're making it so we're encouraging our sons to dance, we're encouraging our, you know, daughters to play football. And if your child is an amazing vegan activist and is, you know, confident in public speaking, why wouldn't you encourage them to do this, to do what they love?
I love that answer.
Yeah, that'd be great. I want my 4-year-old to start her own YouTube channel.
If that's what she wants,
if Kevin. That's what she wants, of course. I think that's what she wants, by the way. Is your...
There's a lot of kids that love doing YouTube channels.
Totally, yeah. I did an interview with her the other day, and she just loves being the center of attention. Is your child old enough to speak? Do you want to put him on, and we can ask him a question?
He is actually... not he's at busy. The age okay. Where he could say anything except for hello or, you know, okay. How are you?
Well, because I wanted to ask, and this is leading to my next question, what do you think is the best reason to give kids, to give to others when they ask, why are you vegan? So my personal approach is to say, animals are our friends and we don't eat our friends. You know, it's so soft, so simple, yet cuts right to the truth of it all. Do you think there is a better reason? You know, I try to shy away from words like murderer and rapist and think, you know, obviously for obvious reasons. So yeah, what do you think is the best reason to give to kids?
I think that's perfect, just because it's exactly why a child is vegan, and the same reason why a kid, you know, when they come to the realization that chicken is chicken and it upsets them, like, the children innately don't want to harm animals. So I think that's the very basic saying, you know, I love animals, that's why. You know, you don't, in some cases you don't need to go further than that, but like, your answer I think is spot on and perfect for the age of, you know, young children and early, like, you know, through elementary school. I think that's 100% it.
Yeah, my daughter always says, I don't eat them because if I were them, I wouldn't want to be eaten.
Another good one.
I was like, yeah, that's perfect. I was like, I didn't even think of it that way. It's like, you should teach me. Well, they just make it so simple. Right? It's like, well, that makes sense. Like, they probably don't. Why don't you eat animals? Because they don't want to be eaten. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, so tell us about Raised Vegan, and Lauren, tell us as well too. Maybe after Emily gives us a little synopsis of what Raised Vegan is, what it is that you're up to, and how people can reach out to you and learn more about your what you're doing.
So Raised Vegan is actually founded on the Facebook group Vegan Pregnancy and Parenting. My business partner, Janet Carney, she founded it. She started it, she grew it, and then brought me in to help her out back into like 2017, early on, just the cusp actually, December into January. And I was just helping with the social media side. And we were just constantly talking with each other on how do we help more? She's, started the amazing Instagram account, Vegan Pregnancy and Parenting, which is actually how I connected with her. She lives in my hometown from where I grew up. I obviously don't live there anymore. And it's just like, it was like a small world kind of experience for me to think like, here I was setting out on my vegan journey as a parent. And then I was connecting with somebody who just happens to live like, a couple blocks away from me, from where I grew up. And I think working with her, like we've been able to just, I get bounce ideas back and forth, and we made it something that hasn't existed, like there's been resources, for about vegan kids from some places, some resources a little bit on the parenting side, but really the support system for vegan parents was non-existent before, social media really took off. So Raised Vegan now, obviously our mission is to continue providing resources for vegan parents and to, grow as much as we can to help everybody. Because I think we're all looking for a better future for our children. And obviously, from a vegan's perspective, veganism is the ultimate way to do that. It helps the planet, it helps the animals, it helps our health. So we're just, going a million miles a minute, trying to make it so veganism is normal for parents, for kids. And that's the core value. It's that we want to make it normal. And that's how the magazine was born. Having a magazine for vegan parents was something that, is almost kind of weird to think about, because who is this for? Other than just vegan parents, it's such a small niche. So it's been amazing since we put it to print. We've been seeing reviews from parents that aren't vegan that are just interested in, the plant-based lifestyle. They're finding this to be such a cool resource, and it's been a really amazing experience to watch it grow. And then we've brought on a team of incredible women, including Lauren, who is one of our dietitians, and then her colleague Emily Holler. They run together our Facebook group called Ask a Vegan Dietitian. Parents are able to go in there and ask whatever questions they have about, is my kid, like questions we've been talking about here, is my kid getting enough B12? Is soy terrible for you? All those things can be answered by, a registered dietitian, and you don't even have to leave your house. They've been
Is that free?
Really phenomenal. It's not. It's a small fee for the year, but Facebook is actually introducing premium Facebook groups, so we're working on that, and it should be mainstreamed in the next couple of months. So it's just a reasonable cost, but in no way adds up to the same amount of going to a dietitian, right, on a regular basis, what it would cost. And then we have just amazing writers, and I think it's just a really empowered place to work. And I meet so many different moms, so many different people from different walks of life. And it's just amazing. I think women are constantly looked at in a way after they do have children that, you know, they're not as in it, you know, in the workforce. And we're here breaking down that boundary big time.
Awesome. That's great work. I'm really happy you guys are doing what you're doing. We need you. We need you to do what you're doing because it's helping the next generation, and we can't obtain a vegan world without your work. So it's really important. So I just want to ask maybe one last question, and Ben can ask one final question. My final question is to the both of you. What is your favorite meal to make for your kids?
Lauren could take this one.
I was just thinking in my head because there's so many. Let's see. We make a lot of seitan enchiladas, which are amazing. And I just started.
Good.
Yeah, I just started making my own seitan recently, which is super easy, by the way. And it's simple. It's just the seitan, avocado, maybe some vegan cheese if we want, tortilla, refried beans, cook it. Amazing. He loves it.
Emily?
My kid is a mac and cheese eater, so it's pretty much his main core diet. But luckily, the vegan mac and cheese we make, you know, we'll use either a lentil pasta or a chickpea pasta. And then I'm sure you've seen probably different ways to make vegan cheese for mac and cheese, but we'll do sweet potato, onion, garlic powder, nutritional yeast, and cashews. We'll boil them together, blend it up, pour it over. He loves mac and cheese. He could eat it for every single meal. He'll wake up in the morning sometimes asking for it. So that's probably our best family meal.
I think that's every kid.
Yeah.
I know adults that eat it for right. every meal. So that's not just kids. Okay. So how can people subscribe? You just go to the website, and is it, can they get an electronic copy of the magazine? Does it get mailed to their house? How does it work?
So we have it both digitally and in print. It comes for the print in 6 month and 12 month subscriptions, and you can find it at raisevegan.com, but also easier, raisevegan.store. That's where we're able to have you check out right away. And then for the digital, you can actually just visit raiseveganmagazine.com and subscribe right there. And then we also have the Raise Vegan app, which is in the App Store and Google Play. So you can download that and you can subscribe digitally as well.
Can you give us a tease on the next next magazine?
I mean,
what it's going to be?
I just mailed out all of the July issues. So it's Todd Potter. He's an awesome X Games medalist, vegan dad. And it's chock full of amazing articles. Lauren contributes every single month, and they are just the best articles. Like, I look back on, like, you know, she did restless, like, I'm pregnant, so the restless leg syndrome and nutrition article she wrote, it like blew my mind, because, you know, you don't necessarily think about that when it's happening. You're like, I'm getting restless leg syndrome, it's just pregnancy, but you don't think about why it's happening. And she broke it down in like three easy things. Like, you need, what was it, iron, magnesium, and folate, and, like, you know, she gave sources of where to get it from. And it's just, I love the nutritional pieces. I love just getting to see all the vegan like moms and parents that contribute to this magazine every month. It's so cool.
And Lauren, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can join my dietitian group. or I'm at Chronic Planet on Instagram. I'm also at chronicplanet.net. And on Facebook, I'm at facebook.com/lpanoff.
And then what's in the name of the dietitian group? Is it a Facebook group that people can just join?
Yep.
Yeah, so the current group is just called Ask a Vegan Dietitian.
Yeah, perfect.
I was curious, do you guys do any work with schools to do vegan school lunches? I know that's a big thing in California now, but I feel like that would solve a lot of the issues.
That's actually our kind of like next phase of Raise Vegan. I don't know if
oh,
you
great.
Know, like Brooklyn borough president, he's vegan. He's really into it. So like we're talking to people, even like in my own local neighborhood, my son attends the YMCA for his preschool. And he's like, can you come in and do some vegan cooking classes? Like it's just on a small scale level, we're getting involved as much as we can to make our own communities, you know, more vegan friendly. And then we want to bring it to the wide scale. So just keep watching.
Yeah, let us know when more initiatives get rolled out, and we'll definitely share them or even talk about them on the show.
Thank you. Awesome.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. What you guys are doing is so needed, and it's something that like you said, it hasn't been out there, and you filled this need that is. I mean, like I said, Kevin and I are both parents, and one of my kids were little. I didn't have this, so I'm really excited for people that are having children now that want to raise them in an ethical manner, that they have people like you guys to help them out.
For sure. I think the big thing we've been doing this summer is we've been going to vegan festivals, and we've been doing the Raise Vegan Kids Corner. So, you know, a lot of the times parents bring their kids to the festivals. It's crazy hot out, you know, like we've experienced this ourselves. Like me and Janet will attend with our kids, and like how brutal it can be with children at festivals. So this year we rolled out having the little kids corner, and we always get to connect with older parents, like people who have kids now that are in their 20s and onward. And they're saying like, this is amazing. We had nothing like this. We were literally just in the dark ages, like by ourselves, looked like crazy people. So to have it be mainstream is the ultimate goal. So I hope that we can continue providing resources for more parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. We will link all of your info for all the interested vegan parents out there. And for people who want to try to convince others to try a vegan lifestyle, but they have children, maybe you don't have a child, and you're trying to convince a vegan family to become vegan, you guys are a great resource. So thank you so much for your work. Thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I've got a 4-year-old. How old are your kids again?
Mine are 8 and 10.
Yeah, so this was pretty valuable for us, for sure.
So they're a little... Yeah, for me, it was more of the social stuff that was more that I'm dealing with now. My kids were actually raised vegetarian because when they were babies, so it was a little different. I didn't have vegan babies. My youngest would have been maybe 4 when I started feeding her plant-based food. So
was it because, you don't have to answer if you don't want, but was it because you didn't understand, or because there was like a disagreement in the family?
I wasn't vegan yet.
Oh, you weren't vegan yet. I see. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think my youngest would have been, no, she would have been 2 or 3. So, but like the baby stage when they were little, like the formula that we had after they stopped breastfeeding, I don't really know, I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't vegan. So I never had to deal with that stuff, but. What about you? Like your daughter's been vegan since birth, right?
Yeah, there was a small, and I'm embarrassed to admit this part, but there was a small part, maybe like 3 months, where the doctor was insistent that she get goat's milk, and for some reason we caved and we did it. It was only like a 3-month period, and we hated it, and it smelled so bad, and then finally we gave it up. She had a condition that was totally normal, I guess, but made us worried. And now that's gone. She's a completely healthy, normal kid. But beyond that, she's never had any animal products.
You didn't know. You didn't have the education. You didn't know any better, and you were relying on an expert.
Yeah, I was listening to a doctor. You know, yeah, a pediatrician who
just gave you unreliable advice.
Yeah.
Incorrect. Like, but as we said before, like doctors have very little nutrition training.
If I had had Emily and Lauren, on my side at that time.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
exactly. That would have been good. This had existed. I actually, my daughter's pediatrician told me that she needs to get lots of protein in the morning and should eat breakfast sausages. And at that point, I'm like, okay, well, you've lost all credibility. That if you're telling anyone, a child or not, to eat sausages for breakfast, then you clearly know nothing about nutrition.
Yeah, aren't they in the same category as cigarettes?
Yeah, they're class one carcinogen. And that's what the pediatrician was recommending. So doctors don't always know the most about nutrition.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I can't remember if it was Emily or Lauren. That's what they said. If you need a medical advice, talk to a doctor. If you need nutrition advice, talk to a dietitian or a nutritionist, which I'm not sure what the difference is, by the way. Maybe we should have asked that. That could have been a question. What's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist?
I don't know. I'm thinking about that now. I feel like they're the same.
No, I think they're different, but I don't know why.
They're not synonyms. We'll have to look it up. But yeah, I always thought if two parents were vegan for, I don't know, 20 plus years, right? Both independently vegan, and then they conceive a child, and that child is completely vegan throughout pregnancy and grows up to become, like, say, 35 years old and never consumes any animal products, he will just be glowing with, like...
like literally glowing?
Yeah. He'll be the chosen one. He'll be the one that saves us all from the Matrix.
Those people exist. There's people in their 20s, maybe 30s that were raised vegan by vegan parents.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met one, but I'm sure they do exist. Yeah,
I haven't met them in person, but yeah, exactly. Online. So I'll ask them next time if they're glowing. Next time I come across someone who's been vegan since birth.
I mean a literal glow. I want to see radiating from like their skin.
Yeah. Like pictures of Jesus. Like they're just shining.
Right.
I got it.
All right, cool. Let's go on to the news of the day. This was pretty intriguing for me. WeWork is a corporation. WeWork is now under fire from a labor union because WeWork decided to eliminate all animal products from its menu at its workplace. And in addition to that, not reimburse employees for animal products that they purchase on their own while they're traveling. And the labor union is not happy. I don't really know what their argument is exactly. I guess it's got something to do with freedom of choice. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, they want the freedom of choice to destroy this planet. Hey, I know it's your corporation, it's your business, but if your employees want to destroy this planet, then you should let them. Because it is a environmental decision. It's not an animal ethics decision. But they just, you know, they said this meat is destroying this planet, and we're going to take an ethical stand against it and not pay or reimburse our employees when they go out to business lunches or if they're away on travel and they want to buy something that's killing this planet. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does make sense to me too, obviously. Obviously, but maybe we agree with it. But I try to see it.
Maybe we need to be on the other side. Like, how do we look?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to see it from the other side. I don't know. You said this.
You said pretend that we don't care. Pretend that you don't give a shit, and if the planet blows up, then it blows up.
And then I have to not care about the animals as well, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so I don't care about the world. I don't care about the animals. I have to also not care about health concerns, right? I don't care about that. Okay,
yeah, you don't care about anything. I don't. It is a freedom of choice decision, right? But this isn't, they're not stopping people. They're not saying their employees can't buy meat. They're just saying they won't pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that has precedence. Other companies, for example, Mercy for Animals, I know it's a nonprofit and I know its mission is very clearly stated that it wants to have a vegan world and it's trying to create a vegan world. But when I worked for them, obviously they would not reimburse any receipts that had animal products listed on the receipt. not that that ever happened, but they made it clear in the beginning that they would never. And I think that's perfectly fine. Like, that's their stance. So there's nothing going on that's breaking individual liberty. You know, if I really wanted to do it, I could do it with my own money and then just not seek reimbursement. And I also think it's similar to alcohol consumption. Like, some companies will not reimburse you for alcohol consumption. They'll just pay for your meal and not alcohol. So if you go out to eat on the company card, you can't purchase a bottle of liquor and drink it. I think, like, there are rules, there are parameters.
Yeah, nobody gets upset and says, hey, you have to pay for my beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, it's... like, that's the company I work for. It's the same way. Like, I'm heading out tomorrow. I'm traveling and well, I no longer drink, but if I was to have a beer, I wouldn't expect them to pay for it and be outraged if they weren't. And you know what? A labor union wouldn't be standing behind me too, saying you need to let him pay for him to have some alcohol. He had a tough day.
Yeah. And a pack of smokes.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Give me some smokes too. Why not?
I think that's the right way to look at it. Like, if you're forcing companies to pay for meat production, why not force them to pay for alcohol and tobacco too?
Yeah, at least those things aren't destroying the planet.
Yeah, good point.
Right? Meat's even worse.
More animals.
It's more destructive.
Yeah, wow. Never thought about that. Good point, Ben.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, so
shut up, labor union. You're being stupid. Whatever union it is. Well, I'm not saying unions. I'm supportive of unions, but not this one.
This particular labor union. I'm sure they're connected somewhere to the meat industry, and they have to speak up.
Probably.
All right, so let's move on to the excuse. What have you got?
All right, we got the common one here. The most ironic excuse there is. Kevin, just live and let live. You ever hear that from someone?
Yes.
It goes with the personal choice, right? That's my personal choice. Just live and let live. It's like, are you listening to yourself?
Yeah. No, I hear this all the time. I feel like we have gone on over this because they're all so similar, but they are different and slightly different. You're right. It's like a personal choice. It's saying, this is my personal choice. But imagine saying live and let live to, or imagine Jeffrey Dahmer saying live and let live, or anyone who's harming another is not letting live. Someone who harms, who actively kills, or who pays to have one killed is not letting one live. You are doing the exact opposite. So it's hard for me to... wrap my head around what they mean exactly when they say live and let live, while at the same time give money to an industry that kills, that does the exact opposite of let live, that confines, that brings animals into existence, confines them their whole life, and then slaughters them against their will. How on earth could that possibly be live and let live? It's like the exact opposite of live and let live.
I just agree with them. It's like, just live and let live. I'm like, that's exactly the point. That's exactly. So we're in agreement here. Okay, great, great. Because that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Why don't you just live and let others live too?
Yeah, exactly. Let the animals live too.
I just love it because they never see the irony in what they're saying. I'm like, I can't. Every time I hear it, like, or see it, like, I can't believe they went there. It's like they're not even thinking about what they're saying. They're just saying it because they need to object in some way.
It's also similar to the golden rule, and the golden rule, basically everyone accepts that, right? You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the point of veganism is to define others as also including animals. That's it. It's that simple. You know?
Yeah, anybody that wants to live.
Exactly. Yeah. What would you do if you were in their shoes, just like your child says?
Yeah. I don't kill them because they don't want to be killed.
Exactly. So live and let live. You know what? We're going to grab that slogan and we're going to run with it. That's going to be the new slogan of the vegan movement. Live and let live.
All right. Yeah. Because then people can't use it if it's a stupid excuse anymore.
Exactly. And it makes a lot of sense. That's the point of what we're trying to do.
Yes. Sums it up well, doesn't it?
All right. So I hope I answered that sufficiently.
That was a softball one. That was an easy one for her. I gave you a week off.
Okay. Next week's gonna be hard.
Yeah, I'll come up with something crazy next week that you've never heard of before.
All right, let's go to activist tip.
All right, our tip today is we're gonna talk about disruptions.
Okay.
So disruptions. Basically, the word explains what it is. You're disrupting something. So whether it's a place of business or an event, something where cruelty is taking place and people can either purchase it or watch cruelty, you just get in the way and you disrupt the experience that people are having with this cruelty. So that could just be like we talked about last week, going into a grocery store and doing a disruption, a speak out, or people have done it at things like rodeos or where I live, it's like a bullfighting event, but they don't actually kill the cow or the bull because they don't do that and can't do that in Canada, but they parade them around and basically torture them, and people have jumped out and disrupted that and just raising awareness. It's not for the introvert because you really have to be in an uncomfortable situation and be okay to bother people and annoy people and disrupt what they're doing in their day.
Yeah, it's definitely not for me either. I guess I'm part introvert, which is weird. I like roller coasters and all that stuff. But yeah, this one I don't personally like, and that's okay. I'm not saying that other people shouldn't do it. I just think it's not me. It's not my
cup of activism.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'll find a different way to be active and to give a voice. So if you don't like it, if you feel uncomfortable, don't do it. I would say these are my tips for this tip first let me ask a question. Is it, you said just cruelty, so like running across a baseball field or a football field or something just to get attention, is that
a good idea? You're right. That's still a disruption. So it's just a way to raise awareness by disrupting something. You're right. It doesn't necessarily have to be something where cruelty is taking place.
I would say as long as we're making sure the message is clear when we do it, because I think that is where a lot of these disruptions don't really have the right effect, and people just see it as noise and they don't understand why the disruption is happening. So I guess we have to be creative in how we deliver that message and make sure it's effectively communicated to whoever's around us. You know, sometimes
Each one should have a point.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. It should be about something. It should be a way to educate. And it's a way that will get people's attention, but you can still educate while doing it. So if you want to make it about something specific, like for example, when we did the one in the funeral in the grocery store, we were trying to raise awareness for people to see that this was a baby, like a 4 to 6 month old baby that was killed and that they're eating, just because the people didn't realize that. People think that, oh, they've lived a long, happy life and then they're killed at the end. So that was the specific target or the specific goal for that disruption. And so if you just, you know, get out there and disrupt something and yell, go vegan, people aren't really going to understand what you're trying to teach them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. I think it could maybe even have the opposite effect in some cases if we don't do it the right way. I don't know about the opposite effect. I feel like people who eat meat are just going to continue eating meat. It's not like they're going to double down
No.
and eat twice the amount of meat. just because somebody did some kind of activism that they didn't like or didn't agree with. But I do think it's important, if you're going to have their attention, if you're going to have the attention of, you know, hundreds or thousands of people at any given moment, that you have to use that moment effectively. You have to grab it, you have to seize it, and you have to speak whatever message you're conveying in the right way, in an effective way, so that they understand why you're there and why you're doing this disruption. I would also say, and this is just my personal opinion, obey the law. No, yeah, I know a lot of people don't obey the law in these particular cases, and you know what, that, to each his own, I guess, but
you should know the law before you go in, what it
is. And expect the consequences if you know you're about to break the law. Know what the law says and know what the consequences are. I'm a fan of knowing what the law is and operating within those boundaries. So always obeying the law and being creative within the boundaries of the law.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell someone they shouldn't break the law as long if they know what it is and what the consequences are. But you, typically with these disruptions, they are perfectly legal. So you go in and you do a disruption and you're told to leave by the police or whomever. You have to leave within a reasonable time. And as long as you don't physically touch anyone, then you've done nothing illegal. So it won't, you're fine. But before you do a disruption, always figure out what the law is, what you can and cannot do. I do want to make another point too, that when you're doing these disruptions, your biggest audience isn't the audience that's watching you do it. Like you may do it in front of 15, 20, maybe 100 people, but way more people are going to see that when the video is released later. So make sure you get footage when you do them and send it out. Send it out to media. Maybe the media might be interested and run with it. And then all of a sudden you've got a much bigger audience. If not, just it gets shared on Facebook and it gets shared by a vegan to a non-vegan friend, and then their friends see it. And whatever message that you were trying to portray by doing that disruption is now seen by exponentially way more people than it was just that saw it in person.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
That's the main reason to do them.
Yeah, social media is a powerful weapon, as James Aspie said last week, and we need to utilize it. So make sure whatever you're about to do, you get it on videotape, and not just for the effectiveness, as Ben said, but also to prove that you weren't breaking the law, that you didn't, you know, because sometimes people will make an accusation that isn't true. They'll say that you hit someone, or you threw something at someone, or you broke something. And so it's good to have video evidence of what you are doing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, where can people find out the law? Do you know like a good resource for that? Like, where would you send them if they said, I don't know if the law allows this in my state or my country or wherever they are? Where would you send them? You don't know?
Call a police liaison and ask them.
Don't call directly to the criminal code. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, we'll have to look that up and maybe put a link out there. So,
well, I'm in the process of booking a guest that's going to answer those questions for us.
Oh, cool.
But as of right now, I don't have the answers. But I think you actually, that wasn't really a joke. You actually could probably call the police and ask them.
All right. And not a bad idea then.
They likely would let you know. I just want to mention too that before we wrap this up is that, you know, a lot of people are uncomfortable with disruptions, but that's the point, is that we need to, that they're there to make society uncomfortable. And pretty much every social justice movement that has ever been successful has used disruptions. Now, they may have used them at different points in the evolution of the movement, but they've always been there. This isn't something that's new to animal rights.
Yeah, that's a good point. It has to be uncomfortable to some degree in order to change status quo.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah. If we were just comfortable and complacent, nothing would change.
Right, exactly. You can't just always ask people nicely because a lot of people don't respond to that.
Okay, I think you just convinced me to run across the Toronto Blue Jays stadium with a banner that says "Go Vegan."
Yeah, but you'll get charged for that.
All right. Can you, if I call the police and ask them if that's legal, I'll record it so you can listen to the conversation.
Should you do that?
No, in, no, the no, air no, that? I won't.
That'd be funny. I've been calling the police and asking them what he can and cannot do for a disruption.
Yeah, like I said, not my cup of tea.
Write that question down, though, and we'll ask our guest in a few weeks when he's on.
Cool. Do you want to give us a hint who it might be, or you don't want to say the name yet?
I'm not going to tell you who it is, but he is still currently employed by the RCMP.
Oh, cool. All right.
I got to make it happen.
For the non-Canadians, RCMP stands for Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Yeah, it's our national police, so it's like the FBI.
Think of cops on top of horses wearing big hats.
Yeah, it's like the FBI, but they look a little sillier. Well, yeah, that just looks so cool, right? Or at least what you see on TV and in media. They make them look so cool. And the RCMP, yeah, they wear these big goofy hats and this funny yellow outfit and, yeah, often ride horses, which isn't vegan.
I always see them as having maple syrup on their utility belt. It's like a little bottle just in case. I don't know why. That's what I see.
Okay.
I've never actually seen one. I'm still new to Canada, remember?
Well, you go west and you see them more often.
Okay, well, that wraps up this episode. Hope you guys found some value in it. Thank you, as always, for listening. And Ben, don't forget,
Live Vegan.
Thank you for listening to the Live Vegan podcast.